Song, hosted by Dira Sujan.
Hello and welcome. Today, Siren Song is going to the movies in a part of the world where they're almost a religion. Every week in India, about 100 million people buy a cinema ticket. Going to the movies is the favourite pastime for most of the country's 900 million people. From street urchin to banker's wife, the Indian cinema industry has a faithful, hypnotised audience. There is in fact more than one movie industry in India. The south of the country has separate industries that crank out films in several southern languages, the Bengalis have their own, and there's a parallel film industry in the art film sector. But reigning supreme is the vast, Hindi-speaking, Bombay-based industry that's earned the nickname of Bollywood. Bollywood produces some 900 films a year, which almost without exception follow a strict formula. That is, they're usually around 3 hours long and bursting with several song and dance numbers. They always have at least one hero with matching heroine, villains who invariably get their comeuppance in the end, but not before lots of gratuitous violence. The plot is sketchy and quite often involves brothers separated at birth and a noble mother figure, and is sure to feature gaudy mansions and outrageously tight costumes for the women characters. Until recently, no kissing was allowed on the Indian screen, and nudity was, of course, absolutely forbidden. But you can be sure every Hindi movie is simply dripping with covert sex, in the form of gyrating hips, flirtatious glances, and wet saris. The renowned Film Institute in Pune is training good filmmakers who are making films that have gained respect for their quality. But with its relatively minuscule budget and somewhat elitist philosophy, the independent cinema in India, like that anywhere else in the world, doesn't stand a chance with the market inside the country or out. Radha Sesich talked about this very subject with Derek Malcolm, the film critic of The Guardian newspaper.
Well, all over the world, independent filmmakers and people trying to make serious films have a great deal of trouble. There's no money, there's no audience apparently, or at least there's no distribution and exhibition for their films. So it's not surprising that the Indian parallel filmmakers are in much the same state as many European filmmakers. They've lost a certain amount of confidence in their own abilities to attract audiences. And the consequence is that very often the films are really not able to attract audiences because they seem to be introspective and in on themselves and difficult to see how they can actually make a living out of making films. They would say that the serious cinema has to be kept alive, but nobody wants to see it now. They can't get any bookings in theatres. Sometimes they can get television screenings. But the problem in India is that they persist in making their films much too long and much too slow, and often without a really good script. And the consequence is that there's quite a lot of talent in the films, but on the whole, the films don't actually work for audiences. And most of the world thinks about Indian film, if they think about Indian film at all, as Satyajit Ray or the Hindi spectaculars with song and dance. They don't think there's anything much else. And if you were to ask your average film goer in Europe about Indian film, they really wouldn't know much about it. But Indian film has been going for a very long time, and some of the very best of them are commercial films. The songs and the dances in the Indian films have often been amazingly good. In the 30s and 40s and 50s, the playback singers were wonderful, and the musicians were just as important as the actors. So it's completely wrong to say Ray was the great Indian filmmaker and there's never been anybody else. But the young people today who are making films, which they show every year at the Indian Festival, seem to have forgotten that heritage, seem to have rejected all commercial cinema, and seem to be going on their own way. And it doesn't seem to be a very good way, because they haven't the discipline of Ray, and they haven't the vitality of the commercial cinema. And it really is a difficulty to present these films to European audiences very effectively, because European audiences are suffused with American film, which is very, very energetic, very quick-fire, telling stories with big stars. And suddenly they're to see an Indian film coming from Kerala in the south. It's very difficult for them to comprehend the whole cultural difference between that and the Hollywood films that they see. So it's up to the Indian filmmakers actually to make some kind of a gesture.
Women have not been absent in the scenes behind the camera, but in the commercial scene they remain very much a tiny minority. In the parallel movement, however, there are quite a few notable women directors and writers, Meera Nair and Aparna Sen, to name just a couple, but there's no doubt that they have a harder time making it in the business. Malti Sahai is the director of the annual Indian International Film Festival.
We noticed that India has a very large number of women film directors. Right since our early film history, women have been making films in India. Other thing we noticed was that the recent Indian women directors have all received acclaim and recognition for making what we call meaningful good cinema. You know, whether it is Fani Amma by Prema Karant, or Sai Paranjpe's work, or Aparna Sen's work, or Vijaya Mehta's Best Inchi, they are not at all connected with the other kind of cinema. They're all making good cinema. And we started thinking, is it possible that without being necessarily feminist or bound by an ideological feminism kind of structure, is it possible that women directors have a different, more sensitive perception? Then also, how does their work, in the work of Indian women directors, compare with that of other Asian women directors? Are there some commonalities in that? And so we decided to put this program together. It is going very well. It is very popular. And perhaps because in Asia, and particularly in India, women traditionally, historically, are considered a very strong and powerful force. You know, they are described as the original creative principle in our history, you know. Or as, you know, you have images of Parvati and our goddesses and all who are nature, the essence of nature, you know, which are all very powerful concepts, have been linked to women. And we have perhaps inherited these concepts culturally through kind of osmosis. We find that the works of women directors in Asian countries is no less powerful. The image, the representation of women is no less powerful than that of their Western counterparts, and that in itself I think is very significant. Personally, we believe that cinema is cinema, whether made by a man or a woman. And it is a little unfair to to categorize them and thereby try to limit them into a certain kind of ideology. They are all bigger than that, because they are not bound by the straitjacket ideology of feminism. But because it is a small group right now in Asia, because it is still a minority in the overall number of films produced, if you take the average of those done by men and women, people tend to, focus them a little more by saying women directors. You know how media tries to focus attention on people and try to link them into a kind of category? I think they're all beyond that and much above it, and that their cinema is as universal as any man's cinema.
Are they differently accepted by male colleagues?
Yes, in India, surprisingly, all of them have said that they feel at an advantage because they are not discriminated against. And if you are capable, you get the support here. Whereas other cultures have talked of discrimination of women, of their being paid lesser wages and things like that. In India, there is no discrimination. It's all equal. And in most Asian countries, I think this problem does not occur.
I don't think there are too many women directors in Asia, and those that do come through certainly have something slightly different to say and a different way of saying it. Although in India, there have always been women filmmakers. In most of Asia, it's been very, very difficult, and they have very little money to make their films with. It's a very hard process, even for a man, let alone a woman, in this society. But I'm not quite sure whether it's fair to say that they're making different films. I think a lot of them would probably say that they're not women, they are film directors who happen to be women, and that's a slightly different thing. And they might say that they are making the same sort of films, good, bad or indifferent, as men. But even though they might say that, I think they do have a different tone to them, the films by Asian women filmmakers like Sumitra Perry's in Sri Lanka. They actually discuss women's problems better than men do. Not more sympathetically necessarily, but with a different kind of an emphasis, probably the emphasis of experience. Whereas men tend to idealize women or make them goddesses or prostitutes, and not much in between. I think the women make them normal people, and that is a kind of a change. I think we need many more women filmmakers in Asia, because the position of women in Asia is extraordinarily difficult, and terrible things happen to a great many women in Asia. They are married off to people and live in misery because of it. In many nations, there's no question that the lot of women in Asia is a very hard one. And we need the films to provoke people into making a change in this. And I think most of the women filmmakers do actually express that difficulty, the difficulties of their lives, rather better than the men, who idealize women in a romantic way. I don't think actually the women filmmakers do idealize their fellow women. They actually just tell about their lot. Often they tell about the terrible hardness of their lives, of the difficulties they have, the way they are treated by men in that society. So it's really necessary that there should be changes made. And the women filmmakers have to organize. They have to get themselves into cinema more. And they can only do that by actually speaking to each other, having conferences, having seminars, actually organizing so that they're stronger. Because men will, believe me, men will stop them making films quite effectively if they don't organize, if they don't constantly battle for their rights.
Mita Vashish is one of the younger generation of actresses who wants to fight against the usual stereotype of the Indian woman, the suffering mother, the sacrificing wife, the dutiful daughter. Women in Indian life span a wide political, social and economic spectrum, and she believes that the Indian cinema should at least try to represent them a bit more realistically than they have in the past.
What I think is that women tend to sort of be reactive, you know, in terms of how to present women. Reactive as women as sufferers, of course we are, but I don't think in that sense cinema about women should just be about suffering women, which is what the men have been doing in any case. Every time you think a meaningful film is only a film which shows how long-suffering women are and how they're coping with it. So in that sense, I think a film like Kaspa, which is made by somebody like Umar Shahani, and the theme in which he actually celebrates even her propensity to independence, which actually leads to what would, with a middle-class morality, be considered evil, you know? But he actually celebrates that. So I think that is a far more interesting film for a woman, you know? It's far more liberating for a woman to be told that, yes, she can get away with murder if she has to, you know? Than to show films which are always dealing with women as oppressed and show them in oppression constantly, you know?
Do you feel that viewers in India have certain expectations from female roles in films?
Well, I know that in the commercial cinema, the expectations they have is to make sure that the female is good-looking and sexy and sings well and dances well and all that kind of thing. What we need is a cinema of joy, which is more realistic in terms of women and in terms of how they live their lives, because in life you do lead a much more multifaceted experience, you know.
The art cinema movement in India, which has included eminent directors like Satyajit Ray and Ritvik Ghatak, has always tended to dwell on social problems and often portrays people in economically deprived situations. Slums, rural feudally run heartlands, the crowded tenements of the lower middle class. These are the favourite settings of most films that come from the independent cinema stream. But the masses of India who spend their meagre earnings on a movie ticket don't want to see a representation of their reality up there on the screen. They have enough of it in real life. They queue for tickets they can barely afford because they long for some kind of escapism. Exactly what the commercial movie industry provides for them. Film historian P.K. Nair.
About 20 years ago, we had a strong movement of what is known as the new Indian cinema, with a lot of young filmmakers who graduated from the film school at Pune, coming out and making totally different films. Films which tackle a lot of social problems and in a very sensitive way, different from the usual traditional mainstream cinema, which, as you know, has a format of song and dance and a lot of escapism and fantasy. But even now, the bulk of Indian cinema caters to that kind of form, a form which is mostly bordering on fantasy and dream worlds. Even when they tackle a serious theme in the popular film, you know, the theme of terrorists or the theme of contemporary political corruption, even when they tackle such themes, the way they handle it will be in a sort of a fantasy way, because that is the traditional format of Indian storytelling and also the popular film. But there is another school of thinking who do not subscribe to that kind of fantasy treatment for serious themes, who would like to treat serious films in a very serious way. And that films are normally shown in international film festivals and in the Indian panorama section. But unfortunately, we do not have a great audience for that films. Even now, it is confined to a minority audience.
हाकिमे शहर भी मजमाए आम भी हाकिमे शहर भी मजमाए आम भी तेरे इल्जाम भी संगे दुश्नाम भी सुबह है नाशाद भी रोजे नाकाम भी आज बाजार में पाब जोला चलो आज बाजार में पाब जोला चलो इन कदम साज अपने सिवा कौन है.
The music from the film In Custody, which is an example of the concessions the art movement realizes it must make if it is to survive. Even the parallel cinema will feature such essentials as a pretty heroine and at least a few sober musical numbers. But these films make an attempt to stick to reality by not glamorizing poverty and disaster, as the commercial movies do. PK Nair again.
Touching on a political theme is not an indication whether they are doing justice to the subject. You know, what happens with the mainstream cinema, they always pick up subjects which are reflecting the times, that is, the society at that time. Now, if terrorism is happening in the country, terrorism is a good subject for a main film. But when they tackle that subject in the film, they do it in a very strange fantasy way, not coming to grips with the problem. You know, the fact that they handled a contemporary subject like terrorism or political corruption or environmental problems doesn't mean that they do proper justice to it. You know, they use it as a kind of a cliche to build up their song and dance stuff and, you know, the fantasy things.
Roja jaane mein tu dil ki dhadkan tujh bin tarse naina dil se na jaati hai yaadein tumhari kaise tum bin jeena aankhon mein tu hai aansuon mein tu hai aankhe band kar मन में भी तू है ख्वाबों में तू सांसों में तू रोजा जाने मन तू दिल की धड़कन तुझ बिन तरसे
I've seen the very name of Bombay invoke a look of wide-eyed wonder in people from countries as far-flung as Morocco, Thailand and Guatemala, the kind of wonder that Los Angeles or Hollywood brings to the eyes of the star-struck Western world. Bollywood films are adored by much of the developing world, and even Western audiences from the so-called developed world, who may not have much of a taste for the kitsch and melodrama of Indian commercial films, know what they can expect when they come across one on a local TV channel, for example. Vimal Desankar is the director of the Hawaii International Film Festival and an expert on Indian cinema. He believes that Indian films have created certain expectations from the outside world, expectations of certain stereotypes of an exoticized India.
I think the West has a great deal of expectations of Indian cinema for the simple reason, like, you know, people like Satyajit Ray and Hrithik Ghatak and so on have contributed so much that there's a great deal of expectation of creating something that is distinctively Indian. But right now, I don't see much evidence of that, although I'm sure there are some filmmakers who are working along those lines. In most cases, there's what is called stereotypes. You have, you know, stock images of this is what India is. This is what China is, this is what Canada is. So that when those films conform to these images, sort of people think that is real India, which is unfortunate. Salaam Bombay presents only one aspect of Indian life. I mean, the upper class life, the city, you know, elite is as important as the lower class life, so that there are different segments of society and each has to be represented. So to expect only poverty, I think, is to be sort of mistaken. But there's another aspect, and that is, I think, an important one, because some of the more discerning film critics expect something very Indian in terms of the structure of the film. You know, after all, if you take the popular cinema, it's full of songs and dances and fantasies and so on. Is it possible to create something out of those melodramatic traditions? I mean, which is a very realistic and a good expectation. And I don't see much evidence of that happening. Some people like Ketan Mehta and so on tried, but that's another expectation, to create something very Indian in terms of the structure of the film.
Hollywood has always been the great white shark of the waters of international cinema. Its dominating presence threatens not only the smaller alternative industry in the US itself, but also the film industries of other countries whose entire annual budgets for film production can't compete with the millions of dollars Hollywood is capable of sinking into a single movie. Derek Malcolm.
There's no question that there's a very serious threat to world film culture from Hollywood. Because there's two exports in America which are very important, and they are planes and films, not much else. And the consequence is that Hollywood, having swept over Europe, is now turning its attention to Asia, where they know there's a great deal of money to be made. And if we take the example, say, of a small country like Thailand, which has been making films for nearly 75 years and used to make, only 10 years ago, used to make 13 or 14 or 15 films every year, is now down to making 3 or 4 films every year because they can't get into the cinemas because Hollywood has taken over. Now, I'm not really attacking Hollywood because Hollywood is a great popular cinema which appeals to people all over the world. And it's understandable with the money behind Hollywood that it can be very attractive to everybody in whatever country. But what we have to do now is to understand that film is part of culture, which is not understood in Asia very often. It certainly is in India, but it isn't in a lot of Asian countries. That culture has to be protected. And newspapers and television and radio have to understand a bit better than they do now what is actually happening, that this American invasion into their lands is in a way liberating, but in another way makes you prisoner. If it comes into, say, India, if Hollywood comes into India, there's no doubt that the cinemas will be better equipped. They'll have better sound, they'll have better screening facilities. Maybe the commercial cinemas will be better technically because the Americans would insist upon it. But that seems like a liberation. But in fact, what the Americans really want to do is to take over and show their own films in this cinema or show Indian films backed by American finance. What they're after is profit. What they're after is their own domination. They don't mean to destroy everybody else's culture, but because they're the dominant culture in the world today, backed by enormous finances, the danger is there, even in India, which has a film culture that's very strong. But in the smaller countries where the film culture is weaker, it can be wiped out in the space of 5 years. And we have to warn people that what has happened in Europe is now going to happen in Asia. And the result will be death to world cinema as we know it. It's really very difficult to persuade people of the dangers that we're now facing in this respect. But you only have to look at European cinemas to see the lack of European films on in those cinemas to understand actually what is happening. And the problem is that people don't want to go and see European cinema because European cinema is often lacking in confidence because of this. And it's what's happening in India now with the parallel cinema. You can't say it's very good. You can't say it deserves big audiences because it's lacking in confidence. It doesn't get audiences, so it doesn't make the sort of films that audiences are attracted to. It's light follows day. It's a horrible kind of a circular movement. But we have to try and stop it if we can. We have to try. And it means that governments have to protect the culture of their own countries from domination by the culture of other countries. They mustn't ban Hollywood films. They mustn't be ridiculous in that sense. But total free trade involving culture is not on. It's not a possibility. Because if there is that, the dominant culture is what will win.
Derek Malcolm bringing us to the end of the program for today. I'm off to get myself some popcorn and settle down to a video I've just rented from one of the very many Indian movie places in Amsterdam. My thanks to reporter Radha Sesich and technician Richard Vassens. Taking us out is the voice of the near-immortal Lata Mangeshkar, the songstress of hundreds of Indian films over the last 4 decades. This is Dheera Sujan saying Namaste.